I've got three of those ongoing right now. So that is a way, and that is in a formal setting. But in doing my homework, what I began to appreciate, the broader perspective is, in many places, with many of us, we don't see it in the light that I'm going to attempt to describe it, and for which Nathan will give us a better appreciation. But there is also the mentorship that is happening on a day-to-day basis in the interaction with the people that work for you or work with you or work around you. Okay? Some people call it intrusive leadership, in which you really demonstrate a vested interest in them, okay, and in what they do and in what helps them do it and what makes them tick, okay? And that informal mentorship is probably more important than the formal, Dave Brinkley, don't get frustrated, all right, than the formal programs that we have in this command. And for those, that 50% of you that are supervisors in the room now and those on the net, please open your mind to the approaches that we're going to talk about here. Last point to sort of give you a perspective that is opposite of generally how we think about leadership in the United States Army, that in my homework, okay, made sense to me. We have organizational charts. And in this organization, at the top of the chart is General Brito. And everything else and all of us all trickle down from General Brito, right? Well, the inverted approach is, you know, he is at the bottom empowering all of us to perform our duties, okay? Empowering us personally, empowering us with his confidence in us, empowering in his delegation of authorities and responsibilities to us, empowering us in his commitment to us as individuals. Now, he's not able to do that for all 40-some thousand of us, soldiers and civilians, okay? But those that have day-to-day interactions, and if you know General Brito, he does this, right? He takes a vested interest in us, which enables us to do what we need to do for this command in a different way. So it's not down as much as it is up. A way, a thought, a perspective that in my homework I gained an appreciation for. So with that broader perspective of what mentorship could be, you know, we are blessed to have with us an individual who, through a variety of experiences outside of the military, okay, at various levels of business and professional athletics, has seen these approaches work and is willing to, and will share with us some of what you have seen and some perhaps takeaways that we can use in our mentor leadership here inside of TRADOC. So, sir, again, thank you for being here, and I turn it over to you to share with us some of your thoughts, and then we're going to leave time for questions, and the questions really ought to be at him. But I will answer any question that comes to me from TRADOC as well. So, Nathan, sir, over to you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here, and it's always, you know, I'm struck by, over the course of my life, my 55 years, what really unique experiences I've had and fun experiences to be in the, if I'm going to inadvertently hit this button, to be in the coach's box during the Super Bowl and to be helping coaches and watching out and doing that, to play for Coach Spurrier and other things that were really interesting, fun things. And then I'm driving onto the base and thinking, one, what a great experience this is to do this again and to be speaking to you all. And then two, to have my imposter syndrome crop up, which it does almost every day, and think, what in the world am I doing on an Army base talking to the Army about leadership? So Mr. Formica thinks I've got the answers. Feel free to defer all the questions to him. I do appreciate you reading the book. I actually appreciate even more than that you buying it. Tony always wants to make sure people are getting something out of the book. I just want to make sure they're paying list price. So We've got this interesting relationship as we go through and have worked on books and have done things. But Tony and I wrote this leadership book some years ago, and I had watched Tony working for the Buccaneers, and then I'd watched him when he went on to the Colts after being fired by the Bucs, and then I was fired by the Bucs and was finding other things to do, and so had really watched his leadership style and the way he did things, And so I had what I thought was kind of a structure for the book when I finally pitched it to him, and here's why we should do these things, and here's some of the things you do even though you don't realize it. And all of those things were true. And Tony said at the end, he said, okay, that's all well and good, but it really has to all be seen through this whole framework of mentorship, that unless we're building other leaders, unless we're bringing people along, unless we're helping the organization by helping others along the way, then we're really not leading in a way that's going to be sustainable. And so that was typical to take a bigger picture approach to it all and put that lens on it. But I think it's really important, this idea of mentoring. And so I guess I would ask those who would be, and actually it's even broader than that, those of you who are in a supervisory role or beyond, how many of you are innately qualified to mentor somebody? At where you are in life, how many of you are just innately and intrinsically qualified to mentor? Right. So nobody's hand went up. Okay, good. One person's hand went up. And I think you are the only one who's gotten it, because the reality is, and one of the things I learned as a parent, I remember it, told my children not to do X, Y, and Z because I did X, Y, and Z, and I did it wrong, and I did it. I realized as I came along that actually that those are the truths that I need to hear. And so it's me feeling like I'm not, like I don't have the answers. Me feeling like, hey, I've been here. You know, you may think it's linear. It's actually this. And most of the loops, actually, it's through our brokenness, through the mistakes, through the, I really could have done that differently, that we actually can mentor and help other people grow, I think. And so I think it's great that you all are humble enough to think, I'm not sure I'm really well cut out to do some of these things. But I think that's exactly where really the strength of mentoring can often come through.
Well, so in your experience, were there certain key ideas or approaches, as we're, you know, not innately gifted to be mentors, that perhaps, you know, you could share with us that help us better down that path in terms of this informal approach?
Sure. So a couple of thoughts there. One is that I think really important as a foundational matter in leadership, in mentoring others, is the concept of trust. And I recently was with the head basketball coach at the University of South Carolina, Lamont Paris. He's only been there 2 years. Fascinating guy. And he said, look, it's not part of my job description to get players to like me. I don't need to be liked. He said, at the end of the day, though, how many people in your life have you trusted that you've hated? And he said, so my goal can't be to be liked, but my goal is to be trusted. And so what does that mean? What does that mean about how I respond to people, how I relate to them? Do I take time and help them understand that you need to do things this way because you need to do them as a member of the South Carolina basketball team? But here's why we're doing that, and here's why. And so sometimes it might take extra time. But he tries to build into that. And I think that makes a lot of sense, that it's when we build those relationships, when we communicate, at times over-communicate and help people understand what we're doing and why we're doing it, building trust. And so that can be somebody as a supervisor, but it also can be just peer-to-peer as we work and build into things. One of the things that, you know, we talked last year about team building and the importance of mentoring when it comes to building cohesive teams, one of the things that came up last year, and this may be the only thing I've done in my career professionally correctly, but I was working for an NFL team. I presented a salary cap presentation to our head coach and our GM, and they said, this is great, this is fantastic, Nathan, this is great work. And in one of these rare moments of great insight, there was a guy in the corner of the room who also worked with us and was just in a different role, and I paused and I said, okay, just for what it's worth, I kind of put the gloss on it, but all the really hard thinking and all the really insightful stuff was done by the guy in the corner. And so he's the guy. It's interesting then in the next few moments to see him next few days to see him kind of bound and just that simple act of giving credit. That's not the takeaway here. What was interesting, though, then was for me to bigger picture some of the culture, some of the things that we had going on in the office. And so I thought, you know what, I need to take him to lunch. I was not his supervisor. We were kind of working side by side, if you will, but in different roles. And I took him to lunch, and I said, okay, you may not have noticed, but our boss is a clothes hog, right? And so I had bought my first and only silk shirt when I worked for this NFL team. And so we were doing it. We were always dressed to the nines. And I said, you can't keep coming in like it, or you can, but I would suggest you maybe don't come in this rumpled polo with this shirt that hasn't ever been pressed and whatever. And he just had no awareness of this. And so I tried to figure out an awkward lunch at times, but trying to gently talk through. We had been friends for a long time. But in this moment, I thought, let me just go into what's an awkward thing. And it totally transformed our relationship. And so it became something where we were talking about things in a deeper level. We were talking about things. And it wasn't a zero-sum game. In fact, he ended up being promoted in ways that I was not. And that was okay. And I ended up having to go to another team. But it was okay because I was building into him. And it was one of the only things where I, through this series of events, first giving him credit and then realizing, you know, he doesn't see some of these things that I think I see about the culture, I was able to kind of walk alongside him. And it was, again, not a supervisor, not anybody. It didn't really hinge on my job. In fact, in some ways, it took some extra time and some awkward conversations. But I think that's part of where it doesn't always have to be a reclamation project, right? But it can be other things where at times I've realized, okay, I handled this poorly. I was doing executive coaching with somebody recently, and it was just a personal issue and talking through it. And he said, of course, you never make these mistakes. And I said, well, you could ask my wife, and actually here's exactly what you're going through now, and here's what I learned. And it took me 2 months to work my way out of the doghouse and just walking through some of the things. But again, those things where we share and we're vulnerable and we build up trust, where we're able to just walk alongside somebody and mentor them, even if they're not directly responsible to us or for us, that we can help them. And when we think about the inverted organizational chart, you know, again, it gives us a sense of I'm not asking people to do things or whatever, but it's how can I help everybody around me? How can I help these other folks grow? How can I help this organization get stronger? And then when they're gone, you know, one final point, and I don't mean to, again, we need more of you talking and less of me, but, you know, one of the things that I think you also end up with is a situation, and some of you may be Seattle Seahawks fans, but Pete Carroll had been there for a long time, and one of the things Coach Carroll did was that he had a very open-door policy with coaches coming and going. And it's hard because you invest all this time, you invest all this energy in training somebody and bringing them along, teaching them the Seahawk way, whatever it is we do. And so in Tampa, when people are under contract, often we block them from leaving. I was blocked from leaving to go. I had a chance to go to the Chicago Bears to be an assistant GM. The Bucks blocked me. Understandably, I was under contract. The next year they fired me. Go figure. But a lot of times we blocked our coaches because we had spent all this time. We had a great defense. We had whatever, and we were not going to let our coaches go. Well, Coach Carroll took the opposite approach, that if you got any sort of opening that you were interested in, if you wanted to go laterally or if you wanted to take a lesser job at a college or something because it was closer to your family, great, go, Godspeed. Let me help you get the interview. Let me help you get the job, whatever it is. And then those coaches would often come back and work for Seattle again. Or what I also found is if we ever interviewed somebody and they were interviewing with us and they were interviewing with Seattle, good luck trying to get them because they knew, hey, if I go to Seattle, boy, the sky's the limit here because he's really going to teach me, train me. I can stay as long as I want or I can go at any time and he's going to help me to my next position. So I think a lot of times we actually attract people to us the more we mentor them, the more we build into them, the more they realize that, hey, if I come and hang around here, I'm going to get a lot better and I'm going to be a lot better off personally. And professionally, you start to really attract folks who want to be around you, want to interact with you, even if it's for a short period of time.
No, thanks. Thanks for that. And I think common to how we see the profession is the keystone really is trust, as you've described. And part of trust is individuals having a sense that, A, you're good to your word, and B, you aren't going to put me into a situation that maybe I'm not prepared for, and you're going to help me be prepared for it. So yesterday, as you and I talked about this, we talked briefly about a couple approaches to how, you know, to get a team of individuals to work towards a problem set. And I'll probably screw it up here, but then I'd ask you to sort of amplify it a little bit. So we're going to entrust an organization or a subordinate part of our organization to accomplish a task. All right. Do we want to say, this is the process I want you to use? Okay. Or do we say, you figure out the process, this is the outcome I would like to achieve? And what, in your estimate, from your experiences, what causes an organization or a leader to pick one over the other? What are the dynamics that perhaps allows, you know, to tailor the approach you want to use? Over.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, it may be within organizations, it may be task specific. There may be at times where we say, hey, here's the process we want to use, and hopefully we achieve the outcome we want to achieve. And so there were certain things that you know, with Coach Dungy and the Bucks, it was, hey, here's the kind of offense we're going to run, here's the kind of defense we're going to run. And so we had to actually, when he took over the Indianapolis Colts, he had to tell Peyton Manning, we are not going to throw the ball into tight coverage. And Peyton was like, well, the only way we can win is if we outscore them. And Tony's like, right, and the way we'll outscore them is if we don't give them the ball and we do smart things. And so it was interesting to see the dynamic as they talked through process and outcome, and yet the outcome was critical. But here's the process that maybe gives us the best chance. A lot of ways, a lot of times, what you do, outcome really matters a lot. At the same time, the process matters in how we interact with others, whether others can rely on us to do what we say we'll do, to be there when we say we'll be there, whatever it may be. And so I think those things matter. I think part of the other thing that is important is when we understand, as we empower folks to do their jobs or to grow or to learn and to expand, I think we have to recognize at times that people have different skill sets. And so there may be people who do things in different ways. And so it may be a sense of saying, you don't have to do things the way I do it. Here's how I do it. But that may not work for you. And if you want to do it a different way. And so there are certain people who are just very good at, hey, everybody show up, be on time for this, this, and this. And other people kind of work their way around the room and say, you know, hey, we really should probably hold an event at whatever. What would you think if we got together at such and such a time? And all of a sudden they get ownership in different ways versus the person who says, we're just going to do it this way. Both of those can be correct, but both of those maybe may feel intrinsically better to the individual doing it. So it may be that the person touching on that who's empowered to do that has to do it in a different way, or one that feels better for them. Not that we can't change, not that we can't learn. If I could expand one more time on the empowering role, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, that it's important to give people, I think, more responsibility, more chance for growth, to empower them to do things and to grow. But at the same time, we don't necessarily drop them off in the deep end of the pool. And so, you know, I had a couple of experiences with that doing salary cap work for a couple of teams, and one of my supervisors, I was coming in from a law firm. I had been a practicing attorney. I thought I knew what I was doing in some ways. But they said, you know, let's walk through some of these situations. Let me work you through the salary cap. Here's where the draft picks are slotted. And we did a bunch of mock negotiations, and we went through things. And he said, okay, great. I don't want you to even negotiate the whole contract today. I'm going to give you a fifth-round pick, and I want you to do this, this, and this, and here are your parameters, and here's the way. And so we'd check in after each phone call, and I'd say, okay, here's how it went. And he'd say, okay, great. Make sure you're talking about this, because this contract language is critical for us. We're going to have this in the end, so make sure you don't leave that till the end, that's a point we need to have. So make sure you're upfront with that, and as you go through it, let's keep working through that. So allowing me to do that, but at the same time instructing me that here's certain things you need to think about as you go through. But at the same time, empowering me to make some mistakes on the phone. And there was a time in which I had to walk something back and say, hey, I left out some language that's critical to us. And to me, it was a minor point. To them, it was a major deal point. So we ended up having to concede some other areas at the end of the contract. Contrast that with then another situation where working my way through and another boss, for whatever reason, decided that he was going to get on the phone. And unbeknownst to me, he called the agent and said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe Nathan is doing this. And it's exactly what he and I had talked about 45 minutes earlier. I can't believe he's doing this. And he doubled the offer and was the hero, rode in on the white horse, got the deal done. And I was totally cut the legs out from under me. And I thought that was the opposite of empowering me. that I went down a path and all of a sudden I was stripped of responsibility, dignity, the thought that I can do this. So the next time, talk about a lack of trust, the next time we went down that, I'm you know, very clear about what am I supposed to do on this phone call? Can I close the deal? If I don't close the deal, what are going to be the ramifications to me? And trying to understand all that and not fully trusting it even when I got those answers. So a lot wrapped up into that. But I think, you know, as we empower people, we don't necessarily give them more than they could handle, because I certainly couldn't have handled certain things along the way. But then also allowing them to grow and to make those mistakes and go, okay, that was a really bad phone call and you got hung up on, and now how do we resurrect this and figure it out?
Yeah, so thanks for those non-military examples. But I think every supervisor in the room here and everyone that isn't but has worked for individuals such as you described here can appreciate the significance of those opportunities as mentorship. And previously I probably wouldn't have. But the approach taken in which I want you to accomplish this task, okay, and I'm going to help you along the way without doing it for you and coach you about what is or isn't working so that we achieve the outcome that the organization needs. That's huge. I think we've also all worked for folks who came in at the last minute over the top, set you up for not to succeed, and then took credit for it. So two wonderful examples of how we should or should not be as mentor leaders. So I just, again, think about that as you approach your day-to-day duties. You also mentioned the other day about this notion of having an individual, and I think I referred to the person as a Napoleon's corporal, okay? Looking at folks and empowering them, here's the words we hear often, although we may not see it frequently enough, but speak truth to power, right? Be willing to do that. Can you give us some examples from your experiences of where you've seen the junior individual in a room be empowered to point out the obvious, you know, error that is about to be made, and how that has, you know, enabled the rest of the team or organization to gain trust in the leadership?
Sure. So, you know, it's a situation where I think at times you got to figure out when and where is appropriate to speak up and how you're going to do it and what the appropriate way is. But I've been in meetings where, you know, you're going around and you're saying, okay, this, you know, going through the roster decisions, you've had the draft, you're now in training camp, and you're going through and, okay, we're going to need to cut this player and we're going to make a change here and whatever it is. And the head coach or the GM, strong personality, going around saying this is how it's going to be. And then you've got 18 heads nodding around the table. And then you get out of the room and somebody says, you know, I really can't believe we're cutting that guy. That's a bad idea. And you all kind of talk amongst yourselves, and then whatever it is happens. Versus then the situation where somebody says, is willing to say in that meeting, okay, coach, we probably should cut whoever it is, but have we thought about what if instead we did, you know, one of the classic examples was, for those of you who remember Rondae Barber, now in the Hall of Fame, played football here at the University of Virginia down the road, and our defensive coordinator wanted to cut him his first training camp. And his legendary story about he's not fast enough, he's just not going to, it's not going to work out. And somebody in the room saying, you know, we can't, he's a fourth-round pick. We at least have to get to this first season with him and see what we've got. And no, he's not going to work. It's just not going to work out. And somebody being willing to speak up, and Tony and others in the room were also able to but as kind of the conversation headed in the wrong direction, somebody having the ability to say, I don't think this conversation is going the right way, and I really think we need to hang on to Rondae and figure out a different role here for other people. But, you know, one of the examples that I think is fantastic, and a lot of this falls under this idea of psychological safety. Am I safe enough to speak up and to say something and know that I'll still have a job or a position tomorrow? And that I may be wrong, and people may have to say, hey, that was not the right spot for it, or, hey, your thoughts were not correct, and that's okay. But there's still a place for you here, and thank you for speaking up. One of the classic examples is a pilot who's been flying for commercial pilot, flying for 20-something years, and every time he or she would be, and it was in this instance it was a he, every time he would be on a flight with a new first officer, he would say, I've never had a perfect flight, and half the time I make whatever, and I'm sure today won't be a perfect flight, so if you see something, let me know. If I see something you're doing, let me know. Maybe today will be our first perfect flight, but let's make sure we communicate that there's nothing I'm doing that you shouldn't feel like you don't have the ability to step up and do something. Or the surgeon. I mentioned a surgeon who, surgeon at Mass General Hospital, and he'd been doing this for a long time. And every time he had a new team in the OR, he would arrange with one of the techs who had just been brand new to the unit, brand new to whatever, and he would arrange with the tech, and he would walk into the OR. He'd be the last one in. He'd be scrubbed. He'd have his gloves on, and he'd take, as nobody was paying attention, he'd kind of pick up a scalpel and move it off the tray and set it off to the side and keep doing his thing, and he'd say, okay, let's get to work. And the tech would say, excuse me, doctor, we can't start with that scalpel over there. I think you inadvertently put it there. And the doctor would say, oh, my gosh, I did, knowing full well he'd done it. He'd say, oh, my gosh, thank you so much for speaking up. We've got to have that today. Please, everybody speak up. We've got somebody's life in our hands, and we have to communicate, and we have to talk, and nobody's right and nobody's wrong, and we're going to just figure it out as we go. So that sense of, at the end of the day, being willing to step up and being willing to say, hey, is this exactly how we want to do it? Now, understanding maybe as the surgeon's making the incision or whatever, we don't holler as the, is that the right spot? Whatever. Or maybe we do. But figuring that out as we go.
Yeah, so let me just build on that a little bit. And I had the privilege when I was out at CAC to have a senior leader out there explain it to me this way. So you got two time zones in which that kind of conversation should happen, right? And two ways in which it can happen. So before a decision is made in a small group, that kind of input is like always, always, always be there. Okay, before a decision is made in a larger group, okay, you should be a little bit leery about how you bring it up. Because human beings being how we are, there's going to be a challenge associated with that. All right, let's move to a decision has been made, and we're in a small or a large group, okay? If you are not comfortable with the decision, then you probably ought to have a small group one-on-one conversation with the individual that's made a decision, okay? If you're in a large group, you must absolutely do that. And so I would ask supervisors here, think through how you are soliciting that kind of input from either those that work directly for you or who are part of your planning teams, okay? And when is the most appropriate time for that kind of input that the group can best benefit from? So, I saw that work really, really well out at the Combined Arms Center. And I had never really, in the way I described it, is really quadrants for how to do that. But the truth to power is important. And I think the timing of it, as us as subordinates and us as leaders in receiving it, is also important in the mechanism to do it. We speak of, and three of these terms are consistent with what I have read that you and Tony put together. We speak of character, same. We speak of competence, same. And then we speak of commitment in the United States Army. And I can't remember what the third C was inside of the approach that you guys see for mentor leadership. Okay, and this group has heard me talk before about the relationship between character, which is like indisputable. We've got to emulate it, we've got to drive it, and we've got to instill it in all those that work around and for and with us. And then our genuine interest in your competence, okay, and that genuine interest being, you know, are you empowered, capable, and given enough latitude to be all that you can be in that duty or duties you wish to aspire to? And those two things have an effect on your commitment to the organization and to what you're doing. That mentorship in the first two really drives the organization. That's the inverted pyramid kind of thing, I think, to be better. Can you share with us, you know, the slight twist on that or adaptation, difference from your perspective, Nathan?
Sure. Let me just say that whatever the fourth was, I'm sure it was brilliant, but I have no idea what it would have been. But I think one of the things where I would start on that is how important competence is. But from the standpoint, I think, of having a growth mindset, that for a lot of my life I've kind of had a fixed mindset that I'm either good at something or I'm not, and so I avoid the pain of things I'm not good at and I steer toward things I'm good at. But I think a lot of times when we look at competence as something that I'm always striving toward, that it's really important to be good at what I do, it's really important to have whatever answers I need to have, but that I'm on a process, right? And hopefully I'm going to be better tomorrow than I was today, and I'm going to learn more down the line. That gives me, I think, the integrity, authenticity, confidence to say to that first point where I'm going to be somebody of character, I don't know. Or, oh, that's a really good idea. Or to my earlier point, I think Mr. Formica's thoughts were critical on when you say it and how you say it and large group, small group, where you do it. But part of where I want to keep coming back to is us in a position of potential power, if you will, or supervisory capacity. Do we have an attitude where we're approachable and somebody can come to us and say, here's something? And so I think to the extent we approach things from the standpoint of, yes, I know what I'm doing. I am competent, but I'm also learning, and somebody's going to walk in the door today with a better idea or another way to do this or something I can factor in, really I think just buttresses our character and really builds into that. And then also someone's commitment, that they understand that, okay, this is a person who's taking thoughts, taking ideas, and they're continuing to grow. I also should be looking for ways to continue to grow. So I think all those things, I think they really mesh well together, especially if we have this idea that I'm on this path and that I'm never going to necessarily reach the pinnacle of knowing everything that I really wish I'd already hit.
Yeah, very, very good. Well, we didn't get the 15-minute warning, but we're there and past it now. So what I would like to do is open it up for questions, either in the audience, okay, or online. So any questions from the folks in the audience here? Go ahead, Jay.
We've got a mic coming your way, I believe.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. My name is Jay Vega, and I work in RG35 as a planner, but I'm also a retired command sergeant major, and we all have leadership responsibilities, whether in at home and what have you. And I listened to a YouTube message that you put out, and it was about homing in on your strengths and weaknesses, which we all know. We should know that and be aware of our strengths and weaknesses, but you really concentrated on the strengths. Can you expound on that and your thought?
Sure. Thank you. And it may be because I don't like to focus on my weaknesses. But what I learned along the way, and this was a kind of a painful journey to get to this point, but then a really helpful moment of enlightenment, was this idea that I do need to get better at the things I'm not very good at. But at the same time, there are also people who can walk alongside me who are actually really organized. I'm not particularly well organized, or whatever some of those things may be. And so, yes, I should be striving towards some of those things. But there are also things that I'm already fairly good at that I can also improve at. And if I spend my time in those spaces, that really is better for the team. That's better for me. That's better for – so I should be trying to improve and get better all the time. But I really can be working in my strengths and really helping a lot of folks and helping myself in the process. The other flip side of that or corollary to it is that it just caused me great angst to always think about what I wasn't good enough at, and that I was always, you know, I tell semi-jokingly about our three-legged cat that we adopted, and he has no idea he's missing the fourth leg. And I spend all my time thinking about the fourth leg, right? That what am I? I'm not fast enough. I'm not smart enough. If only I was distinguished as Mr. Formica. If only I had that killer beard he's got. Whatever it may be that I don't have. Whereas the reality is I've got three legs, right? I mean, this cat's running all over the house on his three legs, and he has no idea he's missing the fourth. And so I spend so much time thinking about what I'm missing that I don't stop and think, okay, well, I can actually contribute today in some of these areas by doing X, Y, and Z. So thank you.
Anna, did you have some online?
We do. We have one online. So as we mentioned last year, TRADOC has a strong mentoring program for civilians. And in an effort to continuously improve our program, what recommendations can you offer to ensure we maintain its success?
Is that to me?
Sorry, Mr. Whitaker.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Well, I feel completely, this is one of my weaknesses. If only I knew enough about the program to speak on this. But I'm going to talk out of my strengths, which are few, but I'm going to try to grasp one here. So one of the things I think that has been important to me over time is the understanding that whether it's formal or informal, and I've mentored in both situations and I've done coaching in both situations, is that the more I look at it as not to get too systemic or formulaic, but the more I look at it as a regular thing that I either put on my calendar or whatever that I continue to touch base on, because it's easy to kind of let these things get away from us and let kind of entropy and things get busy and things get whatever. But if I look at it as, hey, I haven't touched base in a while, either informally or formally or whatever it is. And so it's not that I need to check a box or it's not that I need to, but at the same time, there kind of is that sense of, am I holding myself accountable? Am I really building into somebody? Have I done enough today to find something meaningful? Or maybe even jotting, my daughters are trying to teach me how to take notes on my phone more effectively, but I have to carry around paper because I forget everything. But I'll find myself making a note and thinking, I'm going to tell so-and-so about this. This came up today, and this is something when I talk to them next week that I can do. And so I just stay focused in this sense of, am I picking up on something? Did I make a mistake today that I can share? Did I, whatever it is, but to kind of keep it front of mind that it doesn't have to be all-encompassing. It doesn't necessarily have to be a chore that I have to get done at the same time. It needs to be something that I'm willing to be accountable, formally or informally, that, yes, I'm continuing to touch base here and I'm continuing to build this relationship and this trust and grow.
Any others in the room here? David Mark.
Good afternoon. We're talking about mentorship today. You just touched on the word coaching. Can you describe the distinction between mentorship and coaching, and in which situations where one might be more appropriate than the other as an approach?
So, despite the fact that I'm an English major and have written books, I am often sloppy with my vocabulary. I do think there's a difference, and I haven't thought about it deeply. You told me, by the way, there'd be no hard questions. And so I just thank you very much for breaking that promise. Coaching at times feels like it can have a level of guidance and instruction, and not that mentoring can't. And coaching can also have that mentoring feel. There may be times when we need to kind of outline, hey, here's where you go from here, and let's walk through that. To me, that feels a little more like coaching. I often use them more interchangeably. I think mentoring has a lot to do with the relationship, the where we're going, the what we're trying to do, how we grow, how we bounce back. That's my gut on where those are. But I know that somebody like Mr. Formica has thought about it more deeply and can probably jump in and save me.
Well, I had a notion prior to having read the book, okay? And the notion was, and this is probably the one that you had, generally if somebody is directly, or you are directly involved in the activity of an individual as a supervisor, you know, enabling them is coaching them to an outcome. A mentor, generally speaking, is outside of the execution of those tasks and is providing guidance and counsel and advice that doesn't have a direct bearing on perhaps what would be their evaluation or their rating or something like that. I think those are probably unneeded divisions of this activity. I think, to the English piece, perhaps the words in this case or could be in these cases synonymous, right? Which is, if we are committed to an individual's ability to improve and that has a direct bearing on the organization, then mentor, coach, tomato, tomato. Let's just do what's right for the individual in building relationships, instilling trust, communicating, expectation management, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that all works towards a common outcome. I think David probably saw these things as distinct and led me to more formal and less informal mentorship in the past. I just share that from the you know, the sense that I gained recently. Okay. Now, we are like 1 minute away.
You're at time.
Yeah.
Thank you both for a great conversation today. I'll turn it to you for any closing comments. And if none,
Hold on. Look, you could have been somewhere else today. You could have been at your desk acting like you were listening to this while eating your lunch or doing the 100 emails that populated from 8 o'clock this morning. So it speaks volumes to me that you came here to be present, to hear, to learn, and to contribute as well. And Nathan, thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule and all that you do to come and share with us. And if you didn't know, Nathan also participated in the strategic seminar at the Army War College this past summer. So he gained a much better appreciation of the Army and of the Department of Defense and what our nation does from a defense perspective. So, sir, thank you. And final words to you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes. So my final word would be this. When I was in the NFL, when I was playing, we talked about, you know, these being – Coach Spurrier would tell us this is the most important game of your life, and these are matters of life and death, and we were going to war and, you know, battle on the field and whatever it was. And obviously, right, none of that was true. You guys are actually standing in that gap for us and standing on that wall that I don't want to stand on or in places I don't even want to think about. And so, one, I thank you. Two, you can find me online and the like, and I would love to interact with any of you as you all build these relationships and get stronger in what you're doing and make this a stronger nation. I appreciate all that you're doing, and thank you for that. If I can play any small role in that, great, but thank you for all that you do.
Thank you all for joining us today, and as always, victory starts here.